Hello and welcome to episode 54 of Good Copy, Bad Copy. I'm Emily King, Radix's content marketing manager, and I'm joined by Fiona Campbell-House, founder and lead copywriter at Radix Communications.
Hello.
And I'm also joined by Radix's creative director, David McGuire.
Hello. I must apologise to everyone straight out of the gate. This is version two of this podcast, for I am a very bad person and I don't know how to use recording equipment properly.
We left you at the controls, didn't we?
The fatal, fatal it was a terrible mistake. Error.
Lessons have been learned, but hopefully the insight from this episode will be just as lovely as it was the first time round, because in this episode we're discussing how much you should rely on your copywriter to come up with content. Clients can often be reluctant to put copywriters in front of their experts and instead want us to use desk research rather than us getting input from the people who really know the subject. But is this a good or a bad thing? If you have any questions or comments about this episode, please feel free to email us via podcast@radix-communications.com, or you can tweet us at radix.com. The recent report from Content Marketing Institute and Marketing Profs looking into B2B content marketing in North America suggested that high quality content is the biggest factor contributing to the success of 78% of B2B content marketers over the past year. But, I mean, with that kind of success, surely foundations need to be laid in the creation of this content. And often we find that copywriters aren't able to access the subject matter experts that would affect this. So how do you get this balance between great content and access?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question, because we find quite often when we start working with a new client that one of the questions they ask us is, oh, are you okay to just go off and research and come up with content ideas and write the content for us? And whenever we get that question, my heart sinks, because to me, that's just not the way to get high quality content. It is actually really interesting to see the results of this survey, the latest survey that CMI and Marketing Profs have done, because it says that high quality content is a factor, or the biggest factor in content marketing success. In the same survey, it says that 47% of marketers outsource their content creation. So you think if, you know, almost half of them are outsourcing it, they want that content to be high quality. And not giving the writers access to their experts is not the way to get high quality content. How many negatives were there in that sentence? I hope that made sense.
All the negatives, and I think that comes through very, very clearly. It's one of those difficult ones, isn't it? Where, because we're at Radix, because we are quite specialised in what we write about with the B2B and the technology, I guess people come to us and go, well, you know about this stuff already. You know, and it's the thing where, well, we know the area, so we probably know the right questions to ask people, and we can probably think of some interesting angles to pull out of stuff, and we know what's relevant, which gives us a head start. It doesn't mean that we can go and, you know, write to you, you know, a piece that's completely original and full of insight around desktop virtualization without actually talking to anybody about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exactly that. So, you know, we know the technology areas. You know, this is all we do, B2B technology copywriting. And so we know where to research and where to go. But what we don't have, as you say, David, if we don't talk to the client, we don't get their unique insight. And so any content we produce is the same as we would produce for any other company asking us to write on the same topic. So, you know, it's undifferentiated from what anybody else might say on the topic. So, I mean, it's absolutely essential for us to get access to those experts to get that particular client's unique, original view on the subject matter.
I think it's a differentiation that's really important, you know, to go above okay quality content to the really, really good stuff. And I think that, you know, but this is for the content marketing things. I think that for content that is maybe less in depth. I don't know how Fiona feels about this. Again, I wouldn't be necessarily happy going off just doing desk research if it was avoidable. But sometimes I find that for something, if I'm writing web copy or something, it can be sometimes more useful to talk to someone at the client's organization who's not the expert in that subject, because they just have a bit more perspective, a bit more distance, and a bit more of understanding of what their customers want, rather than let's look at the really cool geeky niche thing, about this, this particular area of technology. They know what people care about and what they tend to talk to people about in the pub.
Are you perhaps suggesting that the level of expert needed for content perhaps correlates a bit with where that content's going in the funnel?
Ooh.
That's an interesting question, because I mean, I was thinking about, what I said earlier, I was thinking about thought leadership. You know, we get asked to write thought leadership content a lot. There were double air quotes. There's a big debate in the industry at the moment about, what actually is thought leadership, and, 75% of the stuff that masquerades as thought leadership isn't anything of the sort, and there's no original thought in there. So I was thinking about, if you are producing thought leadership content for a client, there has to be original thought, and so you have to talk to an expert. But that's a really good question, Emily, because thought leadership stuff kind of belongs at the top of the funnel. And then, further through the funnel, you want to actually be converting people. And so for that, it helps to have talked to somebody who talks to customers and understands what customers are asking and, what are their objections going to be, or, what are their buying triggers going to be. It's more likely to be a salesperson than a kind of expert. But I kind of consider all those people to be experts, just experts in different things. So one might be a product expert or subject matter expert, and one might be expert in what customers are looking for.
That's fair.
Very interesting.
I suppose, is the risk of not giving, what are the risks of not giving writers the access then to subject matter experts when it comes to certain types of content? I mean, you're just saying about thought leadership, and it kind of just, it isn't really thought leadership because there's no original thought. I mean, that's obviously one risk. What are the others, perhaps, for the content?
I don't know what you think, David, but I think it just comes down to that thing about non-differentiated content. I mean, there's so much content. Everybody knows there's so much content out there. Everybody's doing content marketing. Everybody's producing content. If you're think piece looks exactly the same as some other company's think piece on the same topic because it's been kind of outsourced to copywriters who are researching from the same freely available sources, then there's nothing different about your content. It's not going to stand out. It's not going to be unique. It's not going to give some readers something that they can't get anywhere else. I mean, that's the risk to me. It's just the content doesn't stand out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about, let's take GDPR as an example, right? The number of pieces that are out there in the world about GDPR, like if you search GDPR ebook on Google, you get like 300,000 responses, right? But that doesn't mean that there's no point in writing content about GDPR. It just means that you need to make it more applicable to your audience. You need to share more of what you know, and give them something that's really helpful and really different. And I think that's where an expert and someone that knows something different comes in.
You just go down into a really niche area of it, a really kind of particular area of GDPR that somebody might need guidance on, but isn't going to get it elsewhere. And that's where you do need to talk to somebody, because you, the writer, doing your desk research among freely available sources, aren't going to get that kind of really focused, particular content.
Absolutely. Otherwise, what you end up with is a summary of what everyone else is saying about GDPR. The other thing that I think is a risk if you don't put a copywriter in touch with an in-house expert is that depending on how much we've written about a subject before, but whether we use the language and the terminology with authority, to actually hear how an engineer or a developer actually talks about the features, about the functionality, about why they've done what they've done. Because we do need to write with a certain amount of jargon, with a certain amount of technical precision. And we need to do that with some weight and with some authority. You know, you can tell if someone is using jargon to try and blag rather than to try and explain things clearly. And it's something where, you know, if effectively what we're writing is a conversation between two engineers, it needs to sound right to an engineer's ears. And that's something I think you can only get from somebody that really knows the subject.
Exactly. And I think, you know, particularly in our area of the world, you know, in B2B tech, there is very particular jargon that words that have a very particular meaning in some industries, and to us they might have a broader meaning and we don't quite know what they mean for those particular people. I mean, I was thinking once, we have a client that works in a kind of GPS simulation, and they have a word, coherent, which I mean coherent, you know, it's a word that pretty much everybody knows and we kind of know what it means, but they use it in a particular way. And so I kept writing this coherent simulation of signals. I thought, what does that actually mean though? So I rang up the client and said, look, I'm really sorry to disturb you, but I just don't know what this actually means in terms of signal simulation. So he explained, you know, if you're simulating two signals from different satellites at the same time, they have to be perfectly coordinated, and that's what coherent means in that sense. But I wouldn't have had a clue if I hadn't rung him and asked him. So and otherwise it does feel like, you know, you're just kind of using jargon for the sake of it and you don't really know what it means.
Yeah, and it's so easy with jargon to just misuse it ever so slightly, to mishandle it in where it sits in the sentence. You know, whether people talk about, you know, coherent, you know, or the coherence or a coherence, or, you know, whether you use a definite article, or, you know, how people tend to refer to this stuff in conversation, you know, is one of these things where in any walk of life, you can tell someone that's using jargon to blag, because it just won't quite ring true. And you can make yourself sound very silly very quickly without realizing what you're doing.
I may have just completely misrepresented what coherent means.
This is the risk. I'm sure that client will email in.
Yeah. Okay, but then, so why are marketers sometimes, you know, reluctant to, you know, have clients, you know, sort of interviewed for content? You know, what makes them think, no, this can't happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that often they just don't want to take up the expert's time. So, you know, the expert is generally somebody who is very much in demand, has, you know, lots of demands on their diary, and the marketer probably doesn't want to take half an hour out of their day to talk to a copywriter. And so it doesn't happen. But I think there are ways in which we as writers can make that time that we use really efficient with the subject matter expert. So I don't think marketers need to be so worried about taking up the time of that person, especially if it leads to better content in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's part of the time thing. Sometimes I think that the subject matter expert might just not want to.
I suppose there is that.
You know, but because, you know, particularly if they're technical, they view marketing as something that is unclean and impure, and, you know, needs, it is oft done by, you know, by spivs somewhere. You know, it's, so that maybe that, you know, they don't want to do it, and it could be a status thing for marketing. You know, some marketers are just not very confident about the role of marketing in their organization, particularly kind of a big technical organization. And sometimes I get the sense that there's a reluctance because people, particularly people the further away they get from marketing, sort of view me as a journalist rather than someone who's inside the circle of trust and on their team, you know, and they feel reluctant to tell me the truth about how things are, and they're very guarded about when they talk to me and thinking about what they can and can't tell me, you know, their secrets and their problems, because they think that somehow I'm going to expose that rather than it's my job to pick out the good parts and make them look good, and the more I can understand about what's actually going on. I think sometimes there's a bit of a misconception about what the role is.
Yeah, I've experienced that a few times as well, exactly what you say. And I think it's because a lot of journalists work as copywriters as well. And so there is some confusion in some people's minds about, you know, is this person going to take what I'm saying and then write it up in some publication, and I'm going to see things that I don't want to see out there in the world? So I think that it's a valid concern, but it's something that can easily, it's a concern that can easily be put to rest.
Absolutely. But sometimes, you know, it's a thing that's, you kind of get a sense of it rather than somebody saying it, and there's kind of an elephant in the room and you just kind of go, you know, I'm on your side, right? You know, you're paying me to do this. And you just kind of have to take a deep breath, and they go, oh yeah, no, I knew that. Okay, fine.
Well, then obviously communication there to explain the role of what a copywriter is doing for a brand or a business is important. Mm-hmm. So communication is important, but what are some other ways, like, are that good to kind of get content ideas and sort of expert input kind of like going on?
So one of the things that we've found works really well, at least when we start working with a client, before we kind of get into a rhythm, I suppose, of completely understanding their world, is to do what we call an editorial board, which is where you bring together on a kind of fortnightly or monthly call or meeting, various representatives from within the client organization. So you'd have somebody from marketing, somebody from sales, maybe somebody from partnering, maybe a product expert. And on that call, you kind of talk through, well, you know, what are the trends you're seeing in the market at the moment? What have customers been asking you about? Have any reports come out that are relevant for us that we could respond to? Have you read anything in the media that we could kind of follow up on, respond to? And this is a really good way of gathering a lot of content ideas at once, and then kind of discussing with everyone, prioritizing, okay, which ones are important for us, and let's go and write these ones up. And you can sort of tie that to a calendar so that you can map all the ideas that you've discussed, and, you know, make sure they're mapped to the client's personas and the themes they actually want to talk about. And so it's a really good way of gathering ideas and keeping content on track. That works really well. We found it up to the point where, you know, we've got a really good sense of this client and what they want to talk about, and then we do become a bit more independent in coming up with content ideas.
I think it's useful for marketers, I think, to know the characters in on the technical side as well. Because, yeah, you know, it's very easy to have this stereotype of, you know, a design engineer or a sales engineer or something, you know, but people that are, you know, they've got their own little technology in their area of expertise, and you know, they don't want to talk to some writer or do marketing, and they're terribly busy, this, that, and the other. But there'll always be one who just likes to talk and can just, you know, talk for England, or whichever territory you happen to be working. You know, you'll often find someone technical who just loves to explain stuff to people that don't understand, and that actually gets quite a kick out of doing that. You know, and those are the calls from these people that are supposedly really busy. You find if you're not careful, those calls can overrun and go for ages because they just got so many things they want to tell you. And I think the real trick, as you know, the writer talks to different people internally, then maybe give the marketer some feedback, or maybe the marketer knows who these people are already. But if you can find those people, they're really, really valuable, partly because they just help you to get an enormous amount of stuff, but then also because the other people around them can begin to see the results that you get from working with them, you know, and go, oh, this was really good. Yeah, that was good. We'd like something like that. And then you begin to develop some trust. So it's finding those, you know, finding those talkers, if you like, those explainers. And, you know, there often are people that are very happy to tell you about what they do. You just have to weedle out who they are.
I know we kind of skipped it a bit, but obviously marketers kind of like, you know, they expect content ideas from us, but can they sometimes be reluctant to actually talk to the copywriters they've hired to come up with content ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I find that quite a lot, because I think there are different types of marketer. You know, there's lots of different types of marketer out there, and, you know, some are very content focused and have an almost kind of journalistic curiosity and are very good at coming up with your ideas and, you know, we should write about this and we should write about that. But other marketers are more, you know, they might be data focused, or they might be kind of project focused, they might be very sort of execution focused, and you know, they're not really thinking about the content side of things. And so occasionally I feel like they're almost like they feel like writers are in a different world. There's no, I wouldn't say that it was awe, but it's almost like they don't feel like, they think we're the experts in coming up with content ideas. They don't feel like they're able to contribute to that, which is a shame. So, yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on the type of marketer that we're dealing with.
Mm. It's one of these interesting things, kind of coming up with ideas and coming up with angles for content in particular. Because particularly the more that we know and the more that we work in a sector or work with a client, we can get more of that idea. Not necessarily that we become technical experts ourselves, that we know as much as the client does, ever. But we can begin to get a sense of, I think, what other people are saying in the market, and the thing is that our job, I think, often is to be we're the representative of the reader, right? We're the representative of the customer, of the audience, yeah? You know, we're Simon Mayo, they're Mark Kermode. You know, where Simon Mayo, you know, on the Wittertainment podcast, he's the voice of the audience. And that's kind of our job. Through that, we can sometimes come, you know, I probably, you know, don't know. For a lot of clients, I know the 10 things that I'd like to ask them about, probably. I don't know the answers to those questions, obviously, but I can probably think for most clients of 10 interesting questions that they may or may not have thought of answering before. And I think sometimes that's our job. Then you get into all the interesting stuff that I know that we've talked about a lot internally. And, you know, if other writers, other agencies want to get in touch and tell us how they deal with this, there's the whole bit about, well, there is some work involved in that idea generation, that angle generation. And to be frank, who pays for that? You know, is that something that just that we should do as business development because we might get the writing work as a result of it? Is that coming out with the right idea and the right angle? Is that part of the gig, or is that sort of an extra bit of consultancy before the gig? I know people have so many different ways of how this stuff all fits together, and I'd be, you know, if people want to drop us a tweet or an email, I'd be fascinated to know how people, you know, rationalize that and where they think the lines, because it's such a blurry area.
Indeed it is, yes, and it would be really interesting to see how other people go about that, because that is something that we are talking about at the moment, isn't it? And we're not entirely sure where that sits with the entire service of copywriting, so yeah, it's definitely interesting.
Okay, well, okay, so say you've managed to talk at least to the right people and organisation. At what point can a copywriter sort of like come up with good ideas and sort of content of their own? What level do you feel independent enough to be able to really help the client in terms of not having to use as much of their time to get stuff done?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends from client to client, but I think the more exposure we get to the client, the faster that process is. I think a good example from clients that I work with is the client I was referring to earlier, which is in the kind of GPS simulation space. We've spent a lot of time working with them. We've been working with them for about 4 or 5 years, with regular access to one of the types of expert that you were just talking about, David, about, you know, somebody that really likes to explain quite technical things, and you know, just very excited about the topic, really happy to talk about it and explain things, to the point where, you know, had so many conversations with him that I can now immediately recognise, you know, what's a good story, what's a good topic that we should cover for this client. And He does the same as well, actually. So I might see something and suggest it to him, or he might see something and suggest it to me. And, you know, we've had so many conversations now that it really only needs our agreement. Yes, this is a good story. 10 minutes on the phone to talk about the angle and the approach we take to it. And then I can go off and write it up. So it's become a very efficient process. But because we've had all of that kind of exposure and conversations and work with them beforehand.
But I bet that 10 minutes is still absolutely crucial.
Crucial and brilliant also, like just really interesting. So yes, that 10 minutes is crucial, but it is down to a really nice kind of efficient process, I think.
Because that's the thing. I mean, you know so much, but you pick up stuff, but you're never going to know as much as the expert to really go to that top level of great content. It's like if you said to me, because I've been writing about forklift trucks for years, right? So if you say to me, David, can you go and write us 400 words on how to change a forklift truck battery safely. Yeah, I can probably do that. I might not even need to do any desk research to do that, shamefully. Could I do that in a way that was interesting and different and added stuff to the sum of knowledge in the marketplace? No. You know, but if I talk to a product designer or a safety training expert, they might be able to say, see, the thing that people get wrong is this. And that's the stuff I don't know. And that's the stuff that I will never know. It's always important to, you know, have that gem.
Okay, so one last question before we wrap up. What can marketers and writers do to accelerate that knowledge transfer process beyond having an editorial board? So other than that.
So I think it goes back to what I was saying just now about, you know, getting that exposure up front. You know, the more we can talk to experts up front, the faster that knowledge transfer process will be. That, I guess, is for the marketer to facilitate those conversations. From our point of view as writers, it's reading around the topic. It's doing our own research. It's not just talking to the expert within the client organization, but it is reading. It's like going to relevant events. It's like looking at what other people are saying about the topic and just kind of building up a body of knowledge around that topic area.
I think the events part is really, really interesting. You know, you can sit there and listen, but then also in the conversations that happen between the sessions and things. I mean, one thing that made such a difference to me is that I once worked on a client's exhibition stand. At a trade show I wasn't having the main bits of the conversations, but I was supporting and helping just hearing the conversations that the salespeople were having with the people that came on the stand, what they were interested in, how they were answering the questions. I learned just so much in a single day. And I think that is the other thing. I mean, we're talking about access to salespeople and access to experts, and both of those are really important. But also having access to customers is super important. One of the ways that that I can get to understand the information that I need to get from an expert most easily is if I can do a few case studies for a client, if I can talk to that client's customers and find reasons to do that. I think, you know, that gives me such a head start in those conversations, because I can go, oh yeah, no, I spoke to so-and-so about this, and they're really interested in that aspect of what you do. So that's really helpful. And the other thing that is gold dust, if you can get it, which we can't always, but where you can find excuses to just chat with the technical people outside of the context of we are writing a thing about this, so I need to talk to you for half an hour in this very focused way about that very particular thing. If there are opportunities for you to meet, maybe even in person, but to chat and to actually build rapport with subject matter experts, it makes such a big difference. I mean, the conversations, the content I've had out of, you know, conversations over a cup of coffee because a client's sales engineer happened to have some appointments in Cornwall and popped in for coffee and a chat. You know, I've had so much, you know, good content and things that came out of that, and things that were brilliantly interesting that they as technical people didn't know were brilliantly interesting, or they'd focused on the the wrong thing. You know, mind-boggling conversations because they're very focused on what they're doing. And you kind of go, wow, you're doing what? You know, and it's one of those things. I mean, I've had a client sales engineer rattling on about the thermal properties of a motor and how fantastic it is, and they've had to handle the heat sink in this particularly unusual way because, of course, there won't be an atmosphere when it gets to the surface of Venus. So what they've done with this heat sink is this. And you go, what? Wait. Rewind that conversation. And from his point of view, is, well, we've already had 50-odd motors on the surface of Mars. Venus is only one over, you know. And from his point of view, the fact that they're, you know, potentially specifying and creating a motor that will work on Venus is not the interesting thing. You know, it's the fact that they've had to use the spindle as a heat sink because it won't be immersed in oil or air. And you're kind of, wow, you know, and you missed that. Okay, fine. Interestingly, I suppose for certain aspects of their audience, the heat sink is the interesting thing. But yeah, those conversations that just you wouldn't have had because it's stuff that they don't think to tell you.
And I think that's almost like the ideal symbiosis between the expert and the writer, is that the expert really knows their stuff and the writer knows where the story is and can draw it out.
Well, that's all we've got time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy.
No, it's over so fast.
In the next podcast, we'll be talking about what we learned at the Copyright Conference 2017. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, feel free to email us via podcast@radix-communications.com. You can also tweet Radix on Twitter via radix.com. And you'll find our website at radix-communications.com. We can also sign up for our monthly email for the latest copywriting tips and insights.